This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our homepage, VSiN.com, I'm opening up my laptop and I see Zach Cohen breaking down both women's semifinals in tomorrow's Wimbledon on the ladies' draw. Zach set to join us in about 45 minutes, VSiN senior editor. Also, we have MLB betting splits and best bets for the rest of the card from both Josh Applebaum as well as Adam Burke, and Scottish Open best bets from our Wes Reynolds as the long shots crew has a fresh pot out right now. You get all that along with betting splits, articles, odds by state, tools, and betting guides at VSiN.com. Optimized for mobile or on your laptop. As I'm Ben Wilson, Jared Smith sitting next to me. Euro 2024 into the 71st minute, still 1-1. Jared is like, all right, let's just not talk about that. Get to the 90-minute whistle and cash
the
ticket.
The match is not even happening right now.
There's nothing happening. It doesn't exist. No point in even mentioning it. We'll just move on. We continue our NFC North breakdown, though. Good discussion for us here in the last segment about the Chicago Bears, the preseason third favorite out of the four-team NFC North. And to get some more close-to-the-sun breakdown on them in, very close to what's going on inside the building in Chicago, we go out to our progressive guest line and welcome in Kevin Fishbane, who joins us from The Athletic, outstanding beat reporter there for the Chicago Bears. As Kevin joins us right now, you follow him at K Fishbane. Thanks so much for joining us, Kevin. I think the big question everybody's wondering, even though we have the rookie portion reporting to training camp here in a few days, it's what have been the early returns from people you talked to close to the building and inside the locker room about what Caleb Williams has looked like from a leadership and early playbook grasping perspective here through OTAs.
Yeah, I think all returns have been pretty positive with him. You hear it publicly, you hear it privately. I think he's confident and he knows how to play the position, and he knows how to play the position at a pretty high level. This is a little bit new for the Bears to have a rookie quarterback start with the ones right away. And I think Caleb Williams definitely benefiting from that. But yeah, you heard it from players, you heard it from coaches. I mean, they just were really impressed with everything he's shown them in the spring. And, you know, look, the tests will keep coming, and it's going to be his own defense in training camp. It'll start with the Titans in week one and so on and so forth. I think it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster because that's what happens with a rookie quarterback, even one who is as physically gifted as Caleb Williams. But if you're just boxes to check, he's checked all of them since he got here.
Kevin, I think the bigger question I have, I feel confident that Caleb Williams is the right man for the job. I don't think they would have chosen him at one unless they felt that way. I'm more interested in Shane Waldron's offense and what he brings over from Seattle and kind of how this offense is going to look, because, right, it's a new rookie quarterback. It'd be one thing if that quarterback was coming into an established system with an OC that's been there for a long time and he was trying to adapt what was already in place. But it kind of seems like, to me, Shane Waldron has a blank canvas here, because you can maybe design an offense suited to what Caleb Williams does best. What has been your early vibe with the offensive coordinator in town, and what kind of offense do you think the Bears are going to run this year?
Yeah, you laid it out well, because there's a positive and negative to having a brand new OC with Caleb Williams. He can start over. He can start new with Williams and Taylor's offense. Everyone's on the same page. On the flip side, you know, it wasn't just Caleb Williams learning the new offense. We were out there in May and June. It was DJ Moore learning the new offense. It was Cole Kmet learning the new offense. And then you have a bunch of new players out there too, in Keenan Allen and Gerald Everett and DeAndre Swift, a couple of new centers as well. So, you know, we haven't seen a ton yet of what this offense is going to look like. One thing I kind of like about it from a rookie quarterback standpoint is it's going to highlight the tight ends. It's going to highlight the run game. If you look at Seattle, they ran the ball well and they got the tight ends involved. The Bears have a couple of pretty good tight ends. And what is a rookie quarterback's best friend? A big 6'6" guy that's open over the middle. You know, what's another rookie quarterback's best friend? A guy you can hand the ball off to who's going to get 4 or 5 yards of carry, and they hope they have that in DeAndre Swift. So, you know, it's a good point, though, because I think when you break down this team, you know, you can look at this roster and say, yeah, there's a lot of talent here. This is as talented a group or number one pick a quarterback has had, maybe ever. It's as talented the Bears roster has been since they won the division in 2018. But, you know, the ultimate kind of caveat with all that is you don't really know necessarily how good of a play caller Shane Waldron's going to be. you still have can certainly have question marks about Matt Eberflus as head coach. So the roster is there. It still has got a couple of holes to fill on both lines. But the coaching staff is kind of what's going to be, not necessarily what holds it back, but I think it's going to be, it's the thing that we're all kind of wondering about heading into the season.
Kevin Fishbane with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line, talking Chicago Bears season outlook on Sharp Money. 8.5 the win total. That is juiced to the over. Expectations based on the betting market, a 9-win team here for Chicago. And you talk about all those moving parts and the adjustments here from a coaching perspective, Kevin. We were just talking about first six games out of the chute before week 7 bye for Chicago. What do you feel like breaking down that and considering the adjustment period that will come is the ceiling and the floor for what the Bears record will look like after they get through that first six game stretch?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting way that the schedule has been, you know, as you said, kind of given to Williams and to this team, because you're starting out with teams that aren't necessarily scaring you. The Titans and Will Levis and new coach aren't scaring you. Yes, that trip to Houston is going to be a tough one in week 2. But you know, you go on, you've got the Colts and a young quarterback. The Rams are kind of reworked. You got Bryce Young. You got Trevor Lawrence and Jaguars. It's certainly not murderer's row, and they get, you know, the tougher teams, and certainly you guys, you know, said at the top, they're third in their division right now, and a lot of those teams come in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, I look at that like, shoot, you know, can you get to 4-2? Can you be 3-3 coming out of those first six games? I think I'm trying to figure out, like, yes, they're favored in week 1. They'll be favored against Carolina. They'll probably be favored against Jacksonville, assuming things haven't gone off the rails. You know, the Rams game might be really close, like a pick 'em. So you could say, like, hey, win the game you're supposed to win, and you could be a 4-2 team at the bye. But, you know, every comment that I'm trying to make about this team has to come with the asterisk of this is a rookie quarterback. Rookie quarterbacks just struggle. It is a challenge. I believe if you go back in the last 12 years, you look at the number one and number two picks who have been a quarterback, only one guy has won double-digit games, and that was Andrew Luck. So even the best rookie quarterbacks just have their challenges. So I think if you can get out of there 3-3, 4-2, you're feeling really good, because the second half of the schedule gets pretty challenging.
Yeah, 3-3 seems fair. We were going through it a little bit earlier, Kevin. Basically a pick 'em against the Jags in London. Basically a pick 'em at home against the Rams. They're a slight dog at Indy, relatively bigger dog at Houston, and then the two teams that they're favored against, of course, Carolina, Tennessee at home. You would think the floor is 2-4. Like, if they're not 2-4 heading into the bye, that to me is the worst case scenario. I think 3-3 is a very fair projection after those first six games. And I think the early bye definitely helps Caleb Williams. Let's flip the narrative to the other side, because I'll be honest, you feel really good about the Bears defense. They were kind of a fringe top 10 unit back half of last year. Can they continue that? And will the defense, because of all the rookie question marks you have at quarterback, will this need to be a monsters of the midway type of team for Chicago to really accomplish their goals this season?
Well, it would certainly help. You know, I think you go back, I mentioned that 2018 team, and that 2018 defense was, and you looked at some of the numbers, they were historic in some ways. I mean, they did things that defenses hadn't done in a long time, and that helped Mitch Trubisky a lot. You know, Mitch went to the Pro Bowl that year, and the offense had benefited greatly from that defense. You know, this year's group, certainly the offense is better than that year's group. I think the defense, you know, on the one hand, it's hard to replicate takeaways. And you mentioned the back half of the year, top 5, top 10 in a lot of different categories. And a lot of that was because they were just taking the ball away at a really high rate. The other thing, though, if you look at their numbers, they were still one of the worst teams in the league at sacking a quarterback. Mm. So maybe the turnover luck comes back a little bit. Maybe that regresses. But on the flip side, they're going to be better bet rushing the passer just because they've got Montez Sweat, who's now had a full offseason, who understands the playbook, and his coaches understand how to employ him. You got Jervon Dexter, the 3 technique, going into year 2, and they feel really good about him. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in another defensive end at some point in the next month or so. You know, it depends kind of what they think of what they have. But that is an area where they can improve, and they should improve. And you look at the back half. I mean, I think you look at the back 7 guys, linebackers and DBs, I'd put that back 7 up against any group in the league. I mean, I think they've got 2 of the best off-ball linebackers in football. I think Jalen Johnson proved himself as a top five corner in the game. I think Kyle Gordon is a name. Keep an eye on him as, you know, when you get into December, he could be somebody getting Pro Bowl a consideration for what he does in the nickel. There's a lot to like about that defense. And the other thing, too, is it's pretty young. And the old guy is Kevin Byard, who should be an upgrade over Eddie Jackson, who, you know, had great moments with the Bears but struggled with injuries towards the end, just wasn't the playmaker he was. You bring in Byard, who has been a really good player in his career, can kind of be a leader back there. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be pretty excited about that defense. Again, you kind of have to temper things with the takeaways, but they should be able to improve in a few categories as well.
Kevin Fishbane with us here on Sharp Money. At K Fishbane covers the Bears for The Athletic. Outstanding spot here, Kevin. Thanks so much, man, for the time. We really appreciate it.
All right, take care, guys.
When we return, Jared Smith had his heartbeat a little bit faster than normal because the English team scored, but it was disallowed due to offsides. We'll update you on Euro 2024. Talk little Copa America, huge match tonight, and also Wimbledon. We have to break down some matches going on tomorrow when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and access this invaluable guide, and for a limited time, we are offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSiN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240 annual price, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this fantastic offer. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe and use promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. You know who's a big part of the NFL betting guide, Jared Smith?
Zachary Cohen.
That is correct. You got it.
Ding, 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 ding.
I set you up for it. We are underway here in our afternoon slate of baseball, by the way. Second game of a double dip between the Twins and the Sox. We'll preview the rest of the baseball slate here with Jared in about a half hour. But right now, a little bit more pressing. It's Wimbledon going on right now. We're down to the semifinals, both on the men's and the ladies' side. Zach Cohen joins us on our progressive guest line right now. Betting on X is where you follow him. Outstanding write-ups every single day throughout the tournament here is our VSiN senior editor. As we welcome in Zach, first off, Zach, as you know, we're American tennis fans here. We're all rooting for the American guys. Was this last 3 days not just the perfect encapsulation of Taylor Fritz, the highs and the lows? You come back from two sets down to Sasha Zverev, and then you just totally take a deuce in the fifth set today against Lorenzo Musetti. Like, come on, man. I'm rooting so hard for the guy, and he just can't get over the hump.
It was the perfect encapsulation of American tennis in general between him and Tommy. I thought Tommy, you know, came out hot against Alcaraz. I really thought that he was going to have a chance of winning that match, but his legs just died in those third and fourth sets. Like a completely different player towards the end of that match than he did in the first. And I do think that Taylor, that was really, really tough. I mean, that's got to be the best chance you're going to see for an American to get to a semifinal for quite some time. It was, you know, a match he was a big favorite in, maybe a little bit too favorite. I mean, Musetti is a really good player. Like, there's no shame in losing to Lorenzo Musetti, but maybe doing it on grass as a big favorite, as a big server, definitely stings a little bit.
You know, the one thing, too, that jumped out watching the Alcaraz-Tommy Paul match, like you were talking about, Zach, I mean, Alcaraz was all over the place on his serve, the first set and a half. Like, he couldn't buy a first serve. He was winning, like, 55% of his first serve points only because of that attrition, and you saw how the fatigue really kicked in for Paul, and he loses. Does Alcaraz ultimately comfortably advance? Are you a little bit surprised to see the, you know, the gap as high as and as wide as it is for the Alcaraz and Daniil Medvedev first semifinal on the top half of the draw, when you consider that Alcaraz gets so aggressively priced here? But, you know, Medvedev, while he has kind of taken a back seat to the top echelon of guys recently in the market, has still really proven himself as he takes out Jannik Sinner, albeit an injured Jannik Sinner there in the quarterfinal the other day.
I definitely am. I think that we've been really quick to point out that, you know, Sinner, Alcaraz, and Djokovic are the new big three, maybe even Djokovic fading a little bit, but it really does a disservice to Medvedev, who has won a Grand Slam, is still in the prime of his career. I don't rate him that much lower than I do those top three guys. So when I see really lopsided spreads with Medvedev against those players, I'm pretty quick to jump on the game spread. I haven't written that match up, but that's probably the way I'm going to go with it. I do think, like you said, Alcaraz's serve was all over the place against Paul. He went down a quick break in that second set against Tommy. Tommy was not able to to serve it out. I just think that Medvedev is a little bit more reliable with the ball in his racket. I think he's going to present some real problems for Alcaraz with the flatness of his shots. And I do think that Alcaraz, the shot selection is still a really big problem. You hear all these greats say that he's going to be his best version of himself when he really simplifies things. I think that's very true. I think you're seeing that in 2024. I actually think he was a lot better last year than he is this year, just because I think he goes for too much. I think Medvedev plays a straightforward game, is a really good strategist out there on the court. I think he'll come in there with some sound techniques to get Alcaraz on his back feet. The way he did against Sinner, I thought that was really impressive.
Zachary, on the women's side, it looks like we've got a couple of pretty decent favorites heading into the semifinals. Let's start with Italy's Jasmine Paolini. She was just in the French final, which was exciting. About a $2 favorite against Croatia's Dana Vekic. Anything interesting there?
I ended up going with Vekic to win a set. I think that Paolini probably ends up winning this match. There's really nobody hotter than her right now. She played so well at the French Open. I think a lot of people were concerned about how her game would translate over to grass, but I guess that defense, it works anywhere. She hits a really heavy forehand for a player that is smaller in size. She's really good at the net. But at the same time, Vekic has had a lot of success on grass in her career. So she might not be a player that's been top 10 in the past. Maybe not a player that you think of when it comes to overwhelming talent, but she hits really hard from the baseline. She's good at the net. She's a good server. She's played some really impressive matches in this tournament. She beat Paula Badosa in a three-set match that really could have gone either way, where she really just kind of came through in the clutch at the end. I just think that this is a really big spot for her, one that she's been waiting for a very long time. So I'd be surprised if she went out without, putting up a fight a little bit.
It's amazing, too, just the low center of gravity for Paolini. It seems like she absorbs so much of the pace at Wimbledon. And the way she dusted Emma Navarro as a dog, Zach, I think we were all very surprised to see in that quarterfinal. It's amazing.
Young, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, what are you going to do? It happens from time to time. Zach Cohen with us here, breaking down the Wimbledon semis right now. Also, Dana Vekic, by the way, Jared, her coach is the great Pam Shriver. And Dana Vekic was, it's funny how things come full circle. Remember all those years ago, Zach, James Blake yelling at Pam Shriver to shut up when she was talking too loud while commentating his match? Dana Vekic yells at Pam Shriver to shut up, who's her own coach.
There you go.
Pam Shriver, she just talks too much, I guess, Zach, at Wimbledon. But yeah, to make a semi in your 43rd career Grand Slam, it does speak right to the A, variance at Wimbledon, and B, the way the women's game now is as wide open as it ever has been.
Yep, definitely. By the way, Dana Vekic, a member of one of tennis's power couples, dating Borna Coric.
Oh, there you go.
There's a few of them that sneak up on you.
That will sneak up on you from time to time. To me, we were talking yesterday, Zach, I felt like it was really the last moment to buy on Elena Rybakina in the futures market, where she was still a plus price going into her match today. Where I sort of felt like the match against Elena Svitolina, you could potentially call a de facto final. Rybakina has been so good on serve, wins that match 2 and 3 here. Now she's about -190 to win it all. About a $5 favorite against Barbora Krejcikova, who is a very crafty player and has been a Grand Slam champion in the past, albeit on clay. Do you see any way in which Rybakina finds some trouble in that semifinal?
I actually do. I went with Krejcikova to win a set at +125. I just think that if you look at their head-to-head history, it's brief. They've played two matches, but Krejcikova has won both of those matches. Neither of them were on grass, but they were on indoor hard courts, another very fast surface. So I think that she's shown that she can kind of hold up against that Rybakina serve in the past. And I do think, she's really crafty. Like, she changes the angles of shots. She changes the height of shots. She has a really good slice. That could get to a player like Rybakina. And we've seen her come through against two power players in a row with wins over Danielle Collins and Yelena Ostapenko. Rybakina is a little bit different. She's much bigger. She has a little bit more variety, but it is another power player. I think that Krejcikova has shown that her game gives those types of players trouble. And I just think that Krejcikova, it's really easy to forget that she's a former Grand Slam champion herself. She won the French Open in 2021. She's a player that has been a top five player in the world before. I think she's kind of starting to recapture that form. She's had a lot of bad luck in the health department over the last few years, but when she's healthy, she's dangerous. So I thought that seeing a plus money on just to win a set for a player that's 2-0 against her opponent, that was pretty hard to pass up, especially with Rybakina having struggled against Paolini the last time she was a big favorite in a match late in the tournament at the French Open.
Zachary, let's spin this thing forward. Do you have a final prediction for either the men or the women? Do we have any value left in the futures market, or do you think it's just kind of chalk city as we get this thing to the finals over the weekend?
I think it's probably chalk. I mean, like, I do have Krejcikova to win that set. I think that Rybakina still probably wins the tournament. On the men's side, it's really hard to say. I mean, you're getting Djokovic has 3 days of rest now to play Musetti, who just came off a 5-set match. I would be really shocked if we don't see Djokovic in the final. And I do think that he would have a pretty good shot against Alcaraz if we don't see Alcaraz, you know, tightening things up with the serve, which is just kind of crazy from where we were a few weeks ago. I wrote an article saying that you should have bet Djokovic at plus 400 odds before I saw the draw. Then he ended up playing absolutely nobody.
It's crazy.
Looks healthy after having that knee surgery. He's just had a lot of luck go his way. And just, I thought he played the best match of the tournament against Holger Rune last match. So now I do think that there's a chance that Djokovic does win. So yeah, it's been a really weird tournament.
Hey man, beauty of the draw. That's how it can get so wacky, these tennis tournaments. Djokovic, a $6 favorite at open against Lorenzo Musetti. Alcaraz about -325 there against Medvedev. That's the upset pick I would have. I'm with you, Zach. Medvedev. I will be looking at the plus games bet there.
The Slim Reaper
On Medi. Yes, there in the Thursday semi, and then Krejcikova and Paolini each favorites. I should say Rybakina and Paolini each favorites in their semifinals tomorrow. Zach, as we wrap up here, any strategies, tips for the bettors looking to get involved in NBA Summer League, something that you have always been a great resource for diving deep in as it gets underway here on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you want to go for like teams that have players that have a little bit of experience. I don't think you want to go with the rookie-heavy teams. I think those guys are out there trying to showcase themselves for their front offices and coaching staffs. So I don't think that they're really looking to win games. So I think you want to have some experience. I think you want to have a point guard that makes good decisions. You don't want guards that are just out there looking to score 25 points. I will say, you know, as before I get off here, I think that the Orlando Magic might have the best team in the summer league. And I think you get a really good price on them to win at 17-1. I just think that Anthony Black coming back as a second year player in summer league as a point guard that is going to be looking to make plays and try to earn a spot in that Magic rotation by making good decisions for others. And you got Jarrett Culver, a player that have had a lot of success in the G League last year. Then a bunch of shooters and a good center in Jay Huff, a shot blocker that can make threes.
Great stuff, man. Giving out summer league futures. That's how we love
it. Abracadabra.
Betting on X. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, guys.
Magic 17-1 to win the Summer League. When we come back, we'll talk some WNBA and NFL with Mackenzie Brooks from CBS Sports.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back on Sharp Money, where we can remind you, now is a great time to check out our new look website at vsin.com. I'm looking at it right now. And Zach Cohen, who was just on with us, has his full Wimbledon breakdowns for the semifinals. Women play tomorrow, men coming up on Friday. You can also check out Adam Burke's daily MLB write-ups, along with other best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. It is optimized for mobile, all available at vsin.com. Speaking of the MLB card, Jared Smith, we have yet to break down your run first inning.
Did hit one of them yesterday. The other game got rained out. So hopefully we'll carry it over today.
All right. You got some action? 1-0. You're 1-0.
I have two today.
You have two today. All right. Let's ride into today. We'll talk about that in our final segment. Some breaking news as well from the U.S. Soccer Federation that should have been breaking about 6 days ago. But we'll talk about that as well in our final segment. For now, though, let's talk first a little bit of WNBA and then continue our NFL futures discussion we were having earlier on in the show. As we go out to our progressive guest line, it's a true pleasure to welcome her in. Mackenzie Brooks, betting analyst for CBS Sports, joins us right now. Thanks so much, Mackenzie, for taking a few minutes. And WNBA-wise, I'm just fascinated as someone who is following it very closely like you are and very interested too in the betting markets. We've seen such an explosion here from the ratings perspective. Today was a crazy slate of games. Asia Wilson, 24 points, 20 rebounds. Caitlin Clark, 29 points in a loss, and another double-double for Angel Reese. What have been your biggest takeaways, especially for newer bettors who are looking to get involved with this ratings boom here based on what you've seen now nearly the first half of the season?
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I mean, even compared to last summer, I followed it pretty heavily when no one else really was. And to see just the books get sharper, so much sharper now this summer than they were last summer has certainly been interesting. I think it's still a good time to get involved this quote unquote early in the season, because even now still, if you go past the Caitlin Clarks, the Angel Reese's, if you go past, maybe the top three or four girls right now in a matchup, you can start to find some really good value on some of these props. When you go to the bench, when you go to some of the role players and you get nitty gritty, there's still a lot of value to be had. Certainly not the same value as last summer. The books are certainly a lot sharper now, but it is interesting because you can still find some of those nooks and crannies to find some value.
I agree 100%, especially when you look at just what the prop market has become. The more options you have, the more product that is out there, it's harder and harder to get all those numbers right. You do your homework, which McKenzie certainly does.
Scheduling spots still exist.
Yes.
Still flying commercial. Still playing 4 games in 5 nights.
Yeah. Percent. There are absolutely situations available. All right, let's hop over to the NFL because we had camp day in the WNBA. Everything's already over with. I think the offensive rookie of the year market's always intriguing. We have had there's been a little bit of a wide receiver run over the last few years. You had Ja'Marr Chase, you had Garrett Wilson, but for the most part, it's been a quarterback heavy award. You have two quarterbacks at the top of the market this year. I think the gap between Williams and Daniels is a little bit too wide. And then you get Marvin Harrison kind of sitting there in the third spot there waiting to pounce. How do you see this offensive rookie of the year market playing out in the NFL?
I agree. I think that, you know, that gap is a little too wide as well. I'm big on Jaden Daniels in a multitude of ways, one of them being offensive rookie of the year. And it's a lot of the same logic I had fighting for him in his campaign for the Heisman. Okay, this is not any shade at Caleb Williams. He is so great at what he does. But this award is about exceeding the expectations that are set for you. And our expectations for Caleb Williams are so high that it is almost impossible for him to go out there this season and do more than we already anticipated him to do. So that's just really what it comes down to. Even looking at their win totals, Washington Commanders at 6.5, you have the Bears at 8.5. I think Caleb Williams really would have to go 10-7 and have like 28 passing touchdowns for us to say, wow, he exceeded what we thought he was going to do. So that is big for me. Again, Daniels as well just poses as that run threat that I don't think Caleb Williams meets him there in the same aspect.
Caleb Williams, your favorite plus 135 right now, as McKenzie Brooks joins us right now at Ken's Brooks Bets here on our Progressive Guest Line, talking some NFL futures, especially on the awards markets for 2024. I think a lot of bettors, McKenzie, really struggle with where do you even start? We lost McKenzie.
We unfortunately lost McKenzie. Apologize.
I was about to ask the best question in VSiN history.
That was going to be an awesome question, too. I will say this. It looks like we might be getting her back in a second, though. To me, the offensive rookie of the year stuff is, you look at a market like that, and you just say, how can a guy that is so unproven be that much of a favorite?
Yeah.
And it goes back to expectation versus reality. Like, the reality is you have rookie quarterbacks. There's upside, there's downside. But the pricing says Caleb's a shoo-in here. And I don't see that being the case.
We do have McKenzie back. McKenzie, I was in the middle of asking the best question in VC history. No way you can ever push back against that, but nobody will ever know what the question is. Oh, wait, no, they will right now. I'll ask it to you again. The defensive rookie of the year market. Great to have you back. I feel like most bettors look at that market and they go, how the hell am I supposed to break this thing down? This is impossible. We're just throwing darts. It takes a lot of research and education on role within these individual systems, which you have done a lot of. Can you help the casual bettors out there who have no idea of really where to start on what you should look at there for the defensive rookie of the year?
Yeah, there's a really strong trend. The last 7 winners, there's 2 parts of this equation. You have to have 10 plus sacks, and you're typically coming from a defense that ranked 27th or worse in the season prior, which makes sense because you need to have a high ceiling in order to get to this award. So Laiatu Latu fits this perfectly. He's on the Colts defense who ranked 27th last year. A lot of upside. You need upside to win this award. I think he can get the 10 plus sacks. And I think the Colts defense going from 27th to really improving any mark will show that he can get this award. You look at someone like Dallas Turner, I think he can get the 10 plus sacks. I think he will be so great for that Vikings team, but they already ranked 13th in defensive rating last year. So there's not as much upside for him to show that he's improving this defense. So I think Latu is the best one with the best value right now to show that he has 2 parts of that equation.
31 of the last 34 winners in this market have been first round picks. So you can, and Cooper DeJean, who is getting a lot of love there in Philly, I think you can throw him out. And the rest of it, you're right, McKenzie, it's sacks. It's the ability to get after the passer. To me, that's the name of the game. I think the Sauce Gardner year is kind of an outlier. Unless someone has an unbelievable year in the secondary position, it feels like rush end defensive line is where I would skew here. The stat leader markets are always intriguing to me, especially running backs, especially because it's, you know, basically a defunct position these days. But most rushing yards, listen, there's some big numbers out there for some of these guys. What was your initial handicap in this market? Is it everybody but Christian McCaffrey, or do we kind of go in a chalkier direction?
I'm looking for some value here, not an insane amount of value, but relative to the Christian McCaffreys and the Jonathan Taylors. I think Derrick Henry at around 19-1, 20-1, you can get him right now. I think he has a ton of potential because you talk about yards before contact, none of which he was getting in Tennessee when your quarterbacks are Tannehill or Levis and they don't pose to be any type of run threat. Everybody knows when you're getting the ball. The quarterback or the running back room in Baltimore, it's a different story. They get those yards before contact because defenses know that Lamar could also be a threat himself. So he had 4.2 yards per carry in Tennessee. I think once you start to add those yards before contact that you get in Baltimore, that becomes closer to 5. And I'm talking about the other running backs, but they're basically all gone. Think about Gus Edwards is gone. Gordon's gone. J.K. Dobbins is gone. Keaton Mitchell is still there, but he's hurt for the foreseeable future. So that's almost 280 carries that need to be redistributed somewhere else. And I can't imagine Lamar is taking all of them. So I can't imagine a world where Derrick Henry isn't a workhorse this season.
And McKenzie, to your point, you know, DraftKings is down to 10-1 now. And Henry, clearly there has been a thought of, okay, with a fresh start and a new look and not the worst offensive line in the league, there could be some success there, but still shop around because, as McKenzie points out, you can find that Henry number at a little bit longer. We'll close with the most receiving yards market as well, because yeah, similar to on the rushing yardage market, there is a good amount of variety and volatility that goes on here. You can catch some and pick off some longer shot prices. Where did you see your eye start to gravitate as you looked at this market?
Going younger here, I'm going with Puka Nacua, 14-1. I think he's a good sleeper here. He was fourth in the league as a late round rookie, okay? So now he's going to up his percentage here for this team. He had 35% of the receiving yards last year. I understand Cooper Kupp is always an issue, but I'm not that concerned with him because even when Kupp was playing, Nacua was still getting the yards he needed. And Kupp is always guaranteed to miss a few games. I don't really think this is a 15-plus. I don't think 15-plus game seasons are left in Kupp's career. So I think it's a good spot for him. As long as this team stays as a top 10 passing offense, get around 4,000 yards, and Nacua is getting, you know, from 36 now up to 38% of those, I think he should be in that 1,500 range, which is where you start to see these awards come to fruition. So if he can get to 1,500, which I absolutely think he can, I think he could get this award.
Maybe some bias towards some people who didn't vote for Puka Nacua to win Rookie of the Year last year. Get him a little bit of extra love because I thought he was very worthy of winning that award, but of course you can't overcome what CJ Stroud and the Texans did. Just incredible stuff. McKenzie, where are you with the rest of your football handicapping process? Are you at the point yet where you feel comfortable win totals, division odds, or are you just kind of getting into the player props market at this off-season stage?
I think there's a few win totals I do like just based on strength of schedule, the Saints being one of them. Similar to Houston for me last year, it's not about the team's talent, it's just about the schedule that they have, and the Saints have the same really easy schedule that they had last year when they got 9 wins. I look at teams like the Chiefs, who at this point I don't think really care about the regular season. I could see them going under 11.5 wins just because I don't think Andy Reid is trying to show all of his cards in the regular season. So it's really about the mentality of some of these teams. A few totals I like, a few division winners I like, maybe long shots, but I'm liking the prop market right now. I'm liking the prop market for these rookies. Jaden Daniels, too, 16.5 passing touchdowns, I think is a great number.
It's a good one as well. McKenzie Brooks, awesome insights for us here on Sharp Money. Give her a follow at Ken's Brooks Bets, outstanding betting analyst for CBS Sports. Great to catch up with you, McKenzie. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
If Dennis Allen could just like stay out of his own way, because I feel like I bet the Saints over every year. At least on the Allen regime.
And Dennis Allen.
Stop sticking.
Derek Carr, throw him in that mix too.
When we come back, Jared's best bets for Major League Baseball, and we'll talk about the breaking news in U.S. soccer when we come back on Sharp Money.